It's time for the Biblical Prophecy Program with your host, Dr. Alan Kirshner of Eschatos Ministries.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Biblical Prophecy Program. So finishing our short little series here on different views of the millennium, we are going to move to our final view, and that is the non-temporal interpretation. Unlike the previous historic temporal frameworks, this rubric of interpretation is fundamentally non-temporal. So in recent decades, many scholars have been shifting away from a temporally based category, approaching rather the issue and text from like thematic, mythic, idealistic, or other non-temporal notions, i.e. thematic millennialism. That's what we could call this non-temporal view is the, well, that's what it's called really, is a thematic millennialism. So they don't believe that the millennium is a period of time realized in history, but rather is realized more through a theme or some mythic, again, idealistic or non-temporal notion. And I'm going to give two scholars, evangelical and non-evangelical, who hold to a non-temporal framework, outlining their general methodological approaches and their understandings of the target text, that is Revelation, 19 and 20, at least Revelation 19, verse 11 through chapter 20, verse 6. Excuse me. And these are E. Schlusher Fiorenza and David Matthewson. Maybe some of you are familiar with David Matthewson. He's a Greek scholar. I actually had him as a professor at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary for a number of my, I think I took three or four Greek courses with him. And he teaches at Denver Seminary now. And he's written some important books. And one of the books that I highly recommend is you should have on your bookshelf, and that is the Intermediate Greek Grammar, published by Baker. So an Intermediate Greek Grammar was called by Matthewson and Emig. And excellent grammar. So, he's also written the handbook from Baylor on the book of Revelation as well that I'd recommend. So I'm going to go through these two so you kind of get a sense of the non-thematic view, which is actually growing in popularity. Of course, I'm not thematic. I'm a traditional, a premillennial, I take a premillennial viewpoint, more from a what's called a pre-wrath premillennial viewpoint. So let's begin with Fiorenza. Fiorenza's main methodological concern with interpreting any part of the book of Revelation and the millennial passage in particular is taking the whole discourse into consideration. I want to note here that Fiorenza was a student of Schnackenberg. He wrote an important book way back in the day, God's Rule and Kingdom. It was translated in 1963. But Schlusher, she developed his proposal of a non-temporal understanding of the millennial passage in Revelation 20. He functioned from the principle that since the author of the book of Revelation was human who communicated to humans about divine eschatological categories and processes, then descriptions in human terms require the reader, quote, to recognize it in a language of symbolism, and many of which come from the Old Testament and Jewish apocalyptic literature. So that was one of his main theses there. This, he argued, included artificial time sequences, for instance, in Revelation 20. Consequently, he did not view Revelation 20 as indicating a future concrete interregnum. He presented a non-temporal interpretation where the referent to the thousand years should not be construed as a historical period. Rather, it represents an idea of the victory of martyrs. That's key right there. The book of Revelation employs different pictures, quote, different pictures of the kingdom of God for different points of view. So accordingly, he concludes with the following assertion. The fundamental explanation of chapter 20, verses 1 through 6 must lie in the direction that the vision is a symbolical description of the martyrs' victory and their special appropriate reward. And that's Schnackenberg. He's heavily influential on today's non-thematic interpreters. Let's see here. okay. All right, so let's continue with Fiorenza. So how a passage functions in the larger context and its theological links govern her exegesis, that is, relationships, its relationships to other images and without, and with, sorry about that, and within the strategic positions of the composition. She thinks that traditional theoretical approaches to the book of Revelation have failed and that a completely different approach is needed that can do, quote, that can do justice to the multivalent character of the language and imagery in Revelation. Exegetes have wrongly assumed a descriptive factual principle that have historicized or theologized the images or visions, as well as reduced mythopoetic vision to abstract theological or philosophical principles. So she proposes an interpretive approach of rhetorical analysis that is concerned, quote, also for raising social, political, and theoethical questions as constitutive questions for the interpretive process. Schuster Fiorenza places an emphasis on John's original ecclesial oppressive situation and how he uses symbols of oppression to communicate to them the conflict between Rome and Jesus as Lord. For John, his rhetorical message is concerned with who has the rightful or just power to rule the world. Hence, key symbols such as throne are important for his strategy. How John motivates his audience to overcome the adversary, says Schlusser Fiorenza, is through the symbolic, quote, the symbolic universe, where faithful believers can worship and give their allegiance to Christ in confidence, even to the point of giving up their lives if need be. Now, Onyema captures her proposal, saying, he's another Revelation scholar, captures her proposal saying, quote, insofar as the magnificent symbols and cultic drama of emperor cult legitimates the political order, she maintains that the symbolic universe created by the visionary rhetoric of Revelation constitutes a fitting response to the rhetorical situation it addresses. Okay, so regarding Revelation 20, Schlusser Fiorenza construes chapter 20, verses 1 through 3 and verses 7 through 10 as a single visionary description focused on the punishment of Satan, while John uses verses 4 through 6 rhetorically as an intercalation between the latter units depicting rewards, beatitudes, and other rhetorical functions to motivate right living. She thinks a temporal thousand-year period of resurrected saints reigning contradicts the content and formal narrative because Revelation 22, verse 5 says they will be eternally reigning. She views verses 4 through 6 as an interlude and not sequential with the other events in verses 1 through 30. The symbol of the binding and incarceration of Satan in verses 1 through 3 represents the complete removal of evil powers from this world to the realm of the underworld. In verses 4 through 6, she takes Crema not as the authority to make judgments, but as being deemed worthy. So it is not a punitive, but a positive verdict. It is not so much about the millennium as it is about the first resurrection, which will be realized on earth. The expression 1,000 years for Schlusser Fiorenza refers to the delimitation for those who reign with Christ because the saints are immune from Satan's influence. John was influenced by Jewish apocalyptic literature where the 1,000-year period indicates primordial silence and replaced it with his conception of an ongoing reign with Christ. Now, another theologian, Revelation scholar Mealy, captures her main points about why she does not think that John intends the millennium as a temporal transitional age. And there's 5 points here to summarize this. He says, on literary analysis, John's description of the thousand-year reign of the saints with Christ does not function simply as part of a unified eschatological sequence, but rather as an interlude which steps out of a given sequence in order to give a contrasting look at the church. Number two, in terms of content, this interlude is strongly parallel with the last section of the chapter in chapter 20, verse 11 through 15, but looks at judgment as the rehabilitation and rewarding of the saints as opposed to the condemnation of the unjust. Number three, by the way that Revelation 20 verses 4 through 6 recalls Daniel chapter 7, especially verses 18 and 22, and by the way Revelation chapter 20 verses 7 through 10 recalls Ezekiel 38, it also becomes evident that the millennium is not intended as a transitional age of incomplete blessing or temporarily limited sovereignty as regards the saints. Number four, similarly, Revelation chapter 19, verse 21 shows that the saints alone are pictured as inheriting the kingdom of the world at the parousia. And Revelation 22, verse 5 shows that their reign with Christ is not limited to the 1,000 years. And then finally, number five, furthermore, since the millennium is not even given significance as a whole Sabbath or some other world age of special character, the whole question of its purpose and meaning as an age separate from the final eschaton seem to be left without an answer. So just to sum up everything here with her, all these reasons, she thinks John does not encourage a temporal construal of chapter 20, verses 4 through 6. The thousand-year referent does not possess a temporal nature because there is no connection with messianic transitional speculations, she argues, and it does not demarcate the reign of the saints. The millennium is an atemporal reality that is about the promise of reward for the saints. Okay, now, moving on to David Matthewson here, the second interpreter who takes the thematic millennialism. Matthewson uses distincts, that's David L. Matthewson. Matthewson uses distinctives from both amillennialism and premillennialism. He is influenced by the symbolic methodological approach of Gregory K. Beale and Vern Poitras, who articulates 3 levels of communication in Revelation. Number one, the visionary level, which consists of what John actually saw in his visionary experience. Number two, the referential level, which consists of what John's symbols represented or to what events and persons they make reference. Number three, the symbolic level, which consists of what the symbols connote about the realities to which they refer. Matthewson views the battle portrayed in chapter 20, verses 7 through 10 as a recapitulation of the battle in chapter 19. So he does not construe them as two distinct battles. He adduces four reasons for this. Number one, recapitulation in Revelation as a whole. Number two, differences between chapter 19, verse 11 through 21 and chapter 20, verses 1 through 3. And number three, the Old Testament forebuilt in chapter 19, verses 17 through 21 and 20, verses 7 through 10. And number four, the finality of wrath in 15:1. On this major point of recapitulation, he agrees with amillennialism. On the other hand, he does not think this inexorably leads to an inter-advent millennium period of Satan's binding. His alternative position maintains that Satan's binding and the millennial kingdom occur in the future at the second coming. He contends that since chapter 20, verses 1 through 6 is linked with previous sections of Revelation, for example, the promises in chapter 2, verses 26 and 27, and chapter 3, verse 21, and the cry of the fifth seal martyr saints for justice, this suggests that chapter 20, verses 1 through 6 functions as a climax to these sections, both literally and temporarily. I note here in a footnote, by the way, I'm reading through, I probably forgot to mention this, I'm working through my volume here, A Linguistic Approach to Revelation chapter 19, verse 11 through 20, verse 6, and the Millennium Binding of Satan. Now, I note here that Matthewson thinks it is possible that there is an, quote, inaugurated fulfillment before the consummate fulfillment at the second coming. He says, however, it is also possible that chapter 20, verses 4 through 6 envisions an inaugurated fulfillment of these statements in advance of their consummate fulfillment, suggesting that the millennium portrays the vindication and reign of the saints throughout the entire inter-advent period. And then I note a few verses later, he states, quote, given the second coming context of the visionary sequence in chapter 19, verse 11 through 20, chapter 20, verse 15, I would suggest that while the promises of living and reigning in chapter 2, verses 26 through 27, and chapter 3, verses 21, and chapter 5, verse 10, and chapter 6, verses 9 through 11, have an inaugurated fulfillment in the church age, as Bill contends, the millennium of 20, verses 4 through 6, depicts their consummate fulfillment at the parousia of Christ. Okay, so now a question remains concerning how Matthewson maintains a single battle interpretation while holding to a future millennium and binding of Satan at the parousia. I need to note one thing here. Let me just take a pause here. While thematic millennialism does not believe in a literal millennium or just any historic period of time, it is interesting. They do agree with premillennialists. They are sequential. In other words, in the sense of the concept of that they believe that the battle in Revelation 19 is the cause of Satan's binding. So at least, you know, thematic, you may not agree with them on, you know, negating an actual historic millennial period, but they all agree that, no, it the text teaches it here that there is a cause and effect action happening, that the binding of Satan is something that was caused by the the battle in Revelation, the eschatological battle in Revelation 19. So contra to all millennialism is basically by themselves on this, on that issue, trying to retroject the binding of Satan way back to the first coming of Christ. Okay, so let's see here, where was I? He posits that the Matthewson posits that the 1,000 years should not be construed literally, nor should it denote any period of time regardless of length. He says, quote, "I do not think that the 1,000 years functions to refer to an actual period of time, but symbolically portrays completeness and is to be seen in contrast to the shorter and imperfect temporal designations. For example, 10 years, 3.5 years, and short time." Of course, I, you know, as a premillennialist, of course, I would disagree with them. I believe that those are actual literal time periods, but that's for another day. So they would say that these temporal designations, they depict the church's pre-consummate struggles against Satan and the beast. In this way, the millennial kingdom is another graphic portrayal of the victory and vindication of God's saints or God's people at the end of history, depicted in chapter 11, verses 11 through 12 and verse 18. I should note that he does view the 1,000 year reference having symbolic meaning that excludes a temporal message. As noted, he cites other temporal designations in the Apocalypse, okay, which he views as symbolically depicting the character and meaning of the church's struggle. Their existence is a time of tribulation and testing. So he contrasts these temporal designations with the reference to the 1,000-year period that he says symbolizes the victory and the vindication of the saints. So Matthewson then believes that a non-temporal proposal to the millennial question makes it possible to affirm the amillennial tenet of recapitulation with respect to the final battle in chapter 20, verses 7 through 10, while maintaining the premillennial tenet that establishes the millennium and the binding of Satan at the second coming, albeit not in a temporal sense, but symbolically depicting the victory and vindication of the saints, quote, as the positive correction to the judgment at the second coming, end quote. So accordingly, he thinks the label premillennialism is unsuitable as a description for his view. All right. So even though he would argue that the battle is the cause of the binding of Satan and the reign of the saints, he's not premillennial because of negating a temporal period. So he doesn't consider himself premillennial, but rather the thematic millennial. While amillennialism locates the millennium during the inter-advent period, and premillennialism locates it post-advent, Matthewson understands the millennium in non-temporal thematic terms. Okay, so I hope that gives you a sense here. This whole survey on the three traditional interpretations, sequential and non-sequential, has shown how the historical temporal principle frames many of the questions and concerns among interpreters. And in contrast, alternative views, such as the two that were just surveyed, do not consider the historical temporal principle as part of the message of John. Rather, he is encouraging the reader to think in mostly or exclusively thematic messages conveyed by the imagery that his readers could relate to. So the question remains, and again, talking about my overall thesis and my contribution to millennial literature, is my question is relevant to non-temporal interpretations. While the non-temporal framework does not operate on a historical temporal principle, it is nevertheless concerned with thematic logic and meaning, and what and why and how the story is told. The question, therefore, of the relationship between the binding of Satan and the eschatological battle is also a concern for interpreters who do not function from the temporal principle. For example, while not sharing the interpretation that the millennium possesses a temporal message, Dave Matthewson would agree, nevertheless, with the implication of this study that, or my view, and this is what I noted earlier, that the binding of Satan and the vindication of the saints are established, at least thematically, with the parousia battle in chapter 19 and not before it. The temporal principle, then, is not a necessary point for the thesis in the study because non-temporal scholars can benefit just as much from its linguistic analysis and conclusions as scholars who maintain the temporal principle. Okay, guys, I know that was a lot to take in there, but I, you know, this is a view. Non-temporal interpretations, or the non-temporal interpretation, is something maybe a lot of you are not familiar with. So I took some extra time to share two interpreters who have that view. So I hope that's been helpful. Again, I covered the temporal view and the non-temporal view in the last few episodes and kind of broke it down from there. So again, I hope it's been helpful and we'll see you next time. Thank you.